Hi, and welcome to the Cutaneous Connection, a podcast from the staff at Dermatology Times, aiming to provide you with the latest news in dermatology, exclusive interviews with leading industry experts, and a glimpse at what goes on behind the scenes. I'm your host, Emma Andrus. Today, I'm joined by Jonathan Silverberg, MD, PhD, MPH, Professor, Director of Clinical Research, and Director of Patch Testing at George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences in Washington, D.C. In this episode, Dr. Silverberg discusses the effects of roadway and environmental pollutants on atopic dermatitis flares, severity, and incidence, and provides clinical recommendations for limiting exposure whenever and wherever possible.
So I'm Dr. Jonathan Silverberg. I'm a professor of dermatology at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences in Washington, D.C., and I'm also the director of clinical research and patch testing there. I live, breathe, and sleep all things atopic dermatitis, and in clinical care, see some of the worst of the worst in terms of, really challenging cases.
So specifically, what I'm looking to talk about today is a recent study found that children and young adults living close to high traffic roadways and really heavy traffic areas had a higher prevalence of atopic dermatitis. And so that's something that we're sort of seeing in the research, is that there are maybe some environmental factors that are influencing, prevalence and severity of AD. What are some potential correlations maybe between environmental factors and atopic dermatitis, especially again in terms of factors like prevalence and severity?
Sure. So this issue of the potential relationship with proximity to highway exposures to pollutants has been discussed in different ways for already several decades. It's not by any means a brand new concept. And it's something that's a little bit, it's challenging to turn into a clear-cut clinical recommendation. For some patients, it can actually represent an airborne contact dermatitis to rubber allergens that are literally aerosolized. And if you're really close to a highway, all that tire burning can, right, be an issue. For other patients, it may be more non-specific, if you will, with respect to small particle air pollution and things like that. It's easy enough to say to patients, live in an area far from the highway where there's lots of great ventilation, circulation, trees, et cetera. But obviously, right, we all have our own living arrangements, and so it's not always feasible. But amongst those studies that and researchers who have studied this proximity to the highways, one simple recommendation that they have made is just close the windows. Because, of course, you'd love to have the windows open and get fresh air, but the air may not be so fresh. And so closing the windows and using HVAC systems that will be able to adequately filter out some of those pollutants may be helpful in those situations. Another trick that I've learned from the allergy world is when we believe that there's airborne allergen exposures from walking outside, that when coming inside to just rinse off those clothing exposed areas like the face, head and neck in general, or maybe even arms, hands, so that if there are any allergens that have aerosolized and are sitting on the skin, you just simply wash them off. These are very simple precautions and they help, but sometimes you can't avoid those allergen exposures or irritant exposures and you end up having to treat through that.
Now, we talked a little bit about the fact that that's kind of unavoidable. You can't avoid high traffic. You can't tell people to live in specific areas. So what might that mean for the future of atopic dermatitis or treatment of atopic dermatitis if, you're recommending certain things to patients, but you can't exactly tell them how to live life or where to live and things like that? How might it impact the future of treatment?
Well, I think a lot of this work is very important, at the very least from an epidemiologic perspective, that if we understand that this is playing an important role, that there may be eventually an opportunity for policy interventions and things like that. I don't see us necessarily eradicating the world of rubber tires simply because of atopic dermatitis, but it is something that we definitely need to think about with respect to advocacy. From an education perspective, we may not always be able to change patients' living arrangements, but for those where there is flexibility, it can be relevant to know this, to choose, you know, a domicile that's far from the highway or something along those lines. I've had people with atopic dermatitis reach out to me via email for years saying, you know, I'll move anywhere right now. I'm at the stage of my life where I have that flexibility. Where should I go where my eczema is least likely to flare? And of course, that's such a tough thing to answer for an individual patient. But it is something that patients can take into account as they are planning living arrangements and have flexibility. My thought of this is, even if you can't control those exposures completely, to at least be aware of them, because then if you can kind of predictably expect a flare, you can predict when that next flare happens based on the exposures. Like, you know, yesterday was one of those terrible days of backed up traffic, and now you're going to end up, you kind of know that's going to be an issue for you the following day where your eczema might flare. You could almost think of pre-treating with some of your topical medications or other medications. Or if you know that you're in a situation where you're just getting exposed repetitive exposures, and you can't avoid that, and it's going to lead to frequent uncontrolled flares, it may require stepping up to a more advanced therapy. But I think this really, it will depend patient by patient.
And we've talked a little bit about the patient perspective, but I also wanted to ask, is there anything that dermatologists should be cognizant of when they're looking at these results and other similar results and studies that have taken place? What should dermatologists think about and be aware of?
So, you know, I think at the high level, it really will depend on the region where they're practicing and the regions where their patients are living. This becomes a little bit less of an issue when practicing out in suburban areas that are more spread out or in rural areas that are really more spread out. But certainly in urban areas, this becomes much more of a challenge. It may not be avoidable, but it's something that we have to acknowledge that there are many outside world triggers that can exacerbate atopic dermatitis. Doesn't mean that air pollution or aerosolized rubber particles are the root cause of the disease, but we have to recognize that they can be additional triggers that exacerbate things, and that may vary by different times of year, different even times of day, and to try to provide appropriate, you know, pragmatic counseling around it.
Now, is there anything else related to this specific study or studies of a similar nature that I didn't ask about that you'd like to talk about or include?
And one thing that has been proposed in the literature about this particular issue with relationship proximity to the highway, it has been the potential value of doing epicutaneous patch testing or, you know, allergy patch testing, not prick testing, because we're not worried about food allergens or dust mites or things like that, but thinking about airborne contact dermatitis to rubber particles, and it's not just an irritant reaction, that it might be an allergic reaction. If so, there may be value there of potentially doing patch testing to identify, and then because if that is the case, it may not just be the airborne exposures as a source of those allergens. There may be other sources that are modifiable, or perhaps even more modifiable for patients than their proximity to the highway.
For more Dermatology Times content, from articles to videos and podcasts, visit www.dermatologytimes.com.